And welcome to Small Biz Matters People, Policy, Purpose. This is episode number 230 and we are broadcasting from Triple H Studios in Sydney and across the Community Radio Network. So many acronyms, so little small business time. But the PPSR is one you and your advisors should know about. Why? Well, because it's free. It helps to protect your assets and your business. PPSR stands for the Personal Property Securities Register, which is an official government register, a public notice board of security interests in personal property that is managed by the Registrar of Personal Property Securities. According to the Attorney General's Department, it must be reliable, managed responsibly, and accessible. But it's not that much use if small businesses, the ones who can benefit the most, don't know about it. So, who is AFSA? And what do they regulate and enforce? How does a PPSR come about? And what important role do advisors and associations play in assisting small businesses to manage their assets? The AFSA also manages the application of bankruptcy laws in Australia, which is now a big deal for small businesses. According to Creditors Watch's most recent research, Australia is on track to see 10,000 small businesses collapse by the end of June, the worst number in 11 years. Creditor Watch has said the number of businesses in external administration is hitting a record high. So today we welcome Tim Beresford, the CEO of the government regulator in charge of the Australian Financial Security Authority, to tell us about the important work they do in engaging with small businesses in all industries, how they're working hard to ensure more small businesses can take advantage of the PPSR and understand better the regulations around bankruptcy and personal property.
Welcome to Small Biz Matters, a show where we are dedicated to empowering small businesses and advisors to engage with policy and advocacy. Why? Because what government does very much matters to all small biz, good and bad. Sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office, each week we sit down with experts, advocates, business leaders, policymakers, and politicians to dive into specific areas of government policy that affects your clients and your business. We'll give you the heads up on what's coming down the policy pipeline, find out who's fighting in your corner, and empower you with ways you can influence those decisions which affect your business every single day. We proudly broadcast live on our local community radio station, Triple H 100.1 FM, the Community Broadcasting Network, and later wherever you get your favourite podcasts. Let's hear from this week's expert on Small Biz Matters. People, policy, purpose.
And we're in the studios of Triple H 100.1 FM in Sydney and across the Community Radio Network. And we're welcoming Tim Beresford to the show, and he's live in the studio, of course. And we're really excited to be talking about the Australian Financial Security Authority, a long acronym, AFSA, we'll call it. Welcome to the studio, Tim.
Thanks, Alexi.
It's great to have you here. And I'm thinking this is going to be a really great program to help unpack what the PPSR is. I was explaining before the show the importance of small businesses understanding what it is. And just as I was prepping for the show, I was thinking to myself, you know, there's quite a lot of larger pieces of equipment that small businesses are buying. If we're thinking about the energy transition, et cetera, it's not just about cars anymore. So tell us a little bit about the PPSR and what does a small business typically use it for?
Yeah, look, thanks, Alexi, and look, lovely to be here and with your viewers today. Look, as you said at the introduction, actually, the PPSR is basically a public notice board. And it's a public notice board for small business and large business, but for all businesses to actually, and consumers, to actually just put on notice whether they have an interest in a particular asset. To your point, the asset may be a crane, the asset may be a car. The asset may be consignment. You know, small businesses often sell stock on consignment. And it's just a register which allows you to register your asset, be it, you know, consigned stock, and protect it. Should that consigned stock, for example, be in an organisation that goes under, you've got a protection of your consigned stock. So it's there to register and protect assets. It's a consumer protection, a financial protection.
And typically a small business owner or their advisor would just register something because they want to make sure that it's their name or their business name associated with that asset?
So there's two parts. Firstly, for a small business, you may be looking to buy a good in the second-hand market. It could be a car, could be a crane, whatever. You can simply do a search just to check in that second-hand good whether there are any interests on that second-hand good. You know, is there actually a financial interest on that good? So before you buy the second-hand good, you've kind of like informed about whether there are any interests owed or due to that good.
Mm.
So there's a search function. That's $2 to do a search. And then the other thing which you touched on is registration. And so, you know, you can register your asset to give yourself peace of mind. The classic example is the famous tradie's Toyota truck. You know, the tradie can register the Toyota truck, and that protects the tradie, which is it's his or her tool of trade. It protects the tradie should they find themselves in a situation that the business they're working alongside or with, often in construction, going under. That's their asset. That's protected.
Now, this really came to a fore during the period of COVID when we had all those construction companies going under, closing their doors, gates yep. being locked, and we found that tradies had their equipment locked inside. Is that where something like a situation like this, that was obviously on a mass scale, but is that an example of a situation that you want to know and have that assurity that that piece of equipment is registered in your name?
Yeah, so you touched on it again at the beginning, but, you know, and let's stay with construction. Those organisations going into administration, one of the first roles either a registered liquidator or a registered trustee needs to do is actually get an assessment of who owns what. So very quickly, a registered liquidator or a registered trustee will go on to all the assets and very quickly realise that that Toyota truck is actually not owned by the construction firm, it's actually owned by that tradie. And therefore, actually, that asset is the tradie's asset.
Mm.
So very, very quickly, the administrator, the registered trustee, the registered liquidator gets a very quick assessment of the assets inside that construction site and gets a very quick picture that Toyota truck is owned by that small business, not by the construction entity.
I can imagine that really gets rid of a lot of red tape and tangling up of assets during disputes or situations like that.
And that's the purpose. It's to provide people certainty and to provide people assurance that their assets are protected. And as you said at the outset, it's effectively a public notice board, which allows people to register on the notice board their asset, the Toyota truck, which is the example we're talking about.
Do you have to register an asset in order to make it yours on the PPSR, or is it legally yours anyway because of all the contracts that have been exchanged?
So it's yours, but it's a much more convoluted process. So come back to that administrator for a moment. You then have to actually prove it up.
Mm.
Whilst if it's registered, it's there, it's immediate, it's instantaneous. It's your truck, it's your tradie's truck. The administrator, the registered liquidator, the registered trustee is aware of it and therefore can give you access to it.
Now, I'm getting the feeling that construction is probably, or higher rental industry groups, they're probably ones that are quite familiar with the PPSR. You're trying to engage with a broader small business community. Can you give me some examples of other industries where this would be a really valuable tool?
Well, Alexia, you know this only too well, and your viewers would feel this as well. Often small businesses are working in the business and they're just flat out, you know, working hard every day to keep the business going, to keep their employees employed, to keep their contractors going, to keep their business going. The art here is to actually think about being on the business. And what we find is that we find a number of SMEs are so busy in the business, they're not having time to think about protecting their business or thinking about financial protection, being on the business.
Mm.
So, you know, one, reaching out to your small businesses listening today, please take time. Yes, often it'll happen on a Saturday afternoon, but please take time to check that you've protected your assets by actually just simply registering on the PPSR. And equally to those that influence small businesses, often the bookkeeper, often the chartered accountant. You know, when you next speak to your small business, just ask them the question. You know, have you just put your assets and protected your assets and put them on the PPSR, register them? Or just make sure you do a search of that second-hand good. And to your point, you know, there's obvious assets like a crane or a Toyota truck, which is obviously a theme of this conversation that we're touching on. But there also are assets that many small businesses actually sell on consignment. They may sell cattle on consignment. They may sell flowers on consignment. They may sell garments on consignment. Now, when you sell an asset on consignment, it's yours until the asset's sold by the garment distributor or the stock, cattle stock. Whilst it's on consignment, you can register that consigned interested in that garment or that stock or those flowers. So that's really starting to protect your commercial interests, because should that garment shop go down or should that cattle stock go down, they're your cattle. They're your garments.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of a situation. I used to work for an advertising company, and we used to put advertising on coffee cups back then. And one of the our distributor who manufactured the coffee cups here in Australia, he would often register those coffee cups, and so that when they were in transit or when they were travelling between the two, until they had fully sold or been distributed, he knew that those coffee cups were protected. And it sounds like something quite small, but that is his bread and butter. That is what he is producing, and that's what he works his business in. So there's an example of something that needs to be protected. I don't think that's something that people really think about.
And this is where I think your bookkeepers and your accountants can really help, because as speaking to the advisors, and you know better than me, but with small businesses they often just have one or two key advisors, but in calling out to the advisors is really talk to the business about their operating model. Your example of those cups, their operating model is they sell things on consignment. That's their operating model. So protect that and protect that fundamental asset, which is the core asset of that particular business.
So as we become more increasingly digitised, I wonder whether or not there are some, inventory programs or warehouse or logistics programs that have this built in, where they automatically register things on the PPSR during the consignment process for people.
Yeah, so what you'll find, particularly those that have a financial interest, so a bank, they absolutely use, and we have a B2B system for using the PPSR. So those that have significant volume have a very, very clear registration process for a B2B process. And so that process for very high volume, very high turnover, because they've got security instrument on a crane, they've got security instrument on a car, that interface happens at a fairly fast and furious rate. In a small business space, it's more only a handful of things, and that process is more through, as you said at the outset, ppsr.gov.au. So, but yes, there is a B2B interchange for really high volume users.
And then, of course, you've got your commercial asset finance brokers, which increasingly small businesses are using as advisors in the system. And they've been really active in supporting your role and the work that you do to improve the PPSR. It went through a process a while ago where there was a consolidation, where there were multiple states that had their own registers. Is that an ongoing process? Is that still going on?
Yeah, look, great question, Alexia. I mean, just for your viewers' benefit, the PPSR really came together around about 10 years ago, and your viewers may even remember this. REVS, which was a registration for cars, basically there was an amalgamation of all the REVS and other like-minded registrations. What effectively has happened over the last 10 or so years is many of those assets often have lives of about 5 to 7 years. So through that process, they have consolidated. But to your point, that process of consolidation continues for assets which have longer than a 7-year life.
So it's almost like a work in progress.
Yeah, look, in nutshell, just to kind of like give you the top line numbers, there's about 10 million registrations on the PPSR. And so when you break that down, new registrations each year are around 2 million. So if you do the real simple maths, you turn it over every 5 years on average. But to your point, there are some assets which have long tails. They are assets which have 25-year relationships.
Yeah, and if they've got relationships where a lender might be taken over by another lender, for example, and then you've got, a situation where that asset has to transition between the lenders. It may not even have anything to do with the small business owner, but it's actually the lenders have to move that asset around. Is that happening successfully?
So then that will change, yes, that will update.
As the thing
progresses. Because it's changed from an old to a new.
Yeah. And I presume that you're working quite intensively with, you mentioned CPA, you mentioned other advisors, commercial asset finance brokers, for example. You're working with them to continue to improve this, the process?
Look, we're always looking at opportunities, how we can streamline and simplify, because, you know, you said it right at the outset. It's about access and making access as easy and as simple as possible to allow people to actually protect their interests, to give them that financial peace of mind. So we're always looking at ways of enhancing and improving the engagement of the PPSR, because it ultimately goes to consumer protection and access.
You mentioned during one of our earlier conversations that there was sort of problems with mapping, and if there was even just a small thing that was incorrect, it could actually throw the system out and it wouldn't work. That's all been fixed, I presume?
Look, the lion's share of that has been fixed. That's not to say we don't find the odd issue. We do, but the lion's share of that process is relatively seamless. But always, if you find something that's a bit confusing, we have an amendments demands process. You know, reach out to us and let's have the conversation.
Yeah, and like I said, you do work with those associations quite selectively and quite intensively over the periods of time. I wanted to ask you as well, how long does it take for an advisor versus a small business owner who's trying to do this themselves, amongst all the other things they're trying to do? Is there a huge discrepancy between getting an advisor to do it or doing it yourself?
Look, I think, hopefully people feel it as straightforward. You can do it yourself. What I really encourage the advisors listening to this conversation is reach out to your small businesses about asking them the question whether they've actually registered on the PPSR. I think most of your small businesses will be able to do the registration themselves. They can always give us a call and have a conversation to walk through it, but I think you'll find that most of them will be able to do it themselves. We have quite a few prompts to help them as they go through that navigation journey. My call out for advisors today is just ensure you're asking them the question about have they protected their assets and have they actually registered or done searches on the PPSR. It's more that question than needing for an advisor to fill it out for you.
That's some great advice for the advisors. We're going to take a quick break here on Small Biz Matters, and when we return, we'll speak to Tim Beresford a little bit more detail about bankruptcy and the work that they do in that space as well. You're listening to Triple H and across the Community Radio Network. We'll be back after this.
This episode of Small Biz Matters is proudly sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office. ASBIFIO assists, advocates and provides information to Australia's 2.5 million small and family businesses when and where they need it. ASBIFIO delivers practical and actionable advice and research to governments on how to improve policies and legislation. Since its inception, ASBIFIO has responded to over 40,000 requests for assistance from Australian small and family businesses and provides access to dispute resolution services, including assistance with disputes that fall under the franchising, dairy, horticulture and oil codes. ASBIFIO also connects small and family business with mental health support should the need arise. As an independent advocate for small business owners, ASBIFIO is committed to ensuring that Australia is the best place to start, grow or transform a business now and well into the future. See how ASBIFIO can support you at asbfeo.gov.au.
Welcome back to Small Biz Matters, People, Policy, Purpose. We're live in the studios of Triple H and across the Community Radio Network, and we've been chatting about the PPSR, the Personal Property Securities Register, with Tim Beresford, the CEO of the Australian Financial Security Authority. But Tim, that's not the only thing that you do, is managing that register and all the complexities that go with it. You also look after insolvencies. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're looking on track to see 10,000 small businesses collapse by the end of June, according to Creditor Watch's most recent research. That's really concerning, and it's an 11-year high. Tell me a little bit about how your agency supports that process and what's changing and what might evolve as a result of those numbers.
Sure. Thank you very much for the question, Alexi. Look, if I could just back up a touch before I come to answer the question. Absolutely. There has been a certain shift and an upward shift in insolvency, both personal and corporate. We look after personal insolvency and ASIC looks after corporate insolvency. So let me talk a little bit about personal insolvency and then I will touch on corporate insolvency. There's no question there's been an uplift, but from a very low base. So at the end of COVID, there were around about 10,000 personal insolvencies in the year that ended 22-23. This year, we're expecting it to be about 12,500, and next year, 24-25, 15,000. Here's the caveat. When we compare that to the 10-year average before COVID, it was 23,000. So it's rising, modestly rising, but I just want to ensure your listeners that it's rising, but against a context and a background which is a lot lower than the 10-year average.
But is that because during the COVID period we had that that avoidance of insolvency process? Is that sort of what skewed the numbers a little bit as well?
So look, there's no question in during COVID, it really, really fell below 10,000. But even before COVID, so I'm talking 2019 and back, the 10-year average was 23,000. So before we had the impact of COVID. So what's underpinning that? A couple of things. Firstly, you've actually seen the economical structural changes in the economy. We have unemployment with a 3 in front of it. That is a profoundly significant result. And the simple reflection for your listeners is when people are employed, they can actually stay afloat. They do hang in there. The second thing, in addition to a very low unemployment rate, is you've seen creditor behaviour fundamentally shift. The Hayne Royal Commission was a fundamental shift in creditor behaviour. Not just the big four banks, all creditor behaviour. And as a result of the Hayne Royal Commission, we have seen creditors actively engage with debtors to try and resolve issues without requiring them to take them through an insolvency process. So there has been a big, big shift in creditor behaviour. Hayne Royal Commission, the big four banks, but way beyond the big four banks. And the third thing that's driving this is actually debtor behaviour. What happened in COVID-19 is that debtors actually reached out to their creditor and said, look, I'm in a bit of difficulty. Can we actually just agree some terms where I may have a payment holiday? And so three phenomena: a structural phenomenon, unemployment at 3%, creditor behaviour changing as a result of the Hayne Royal Commission, and more recently debtor behaviour changing as a result of debtors picking up the phone to creditors during COVID-19. Not suggesting it's not rising, it is rising, Alexi, but I just like to balance the view that you might hear in other sources about it being a substantial rise. It's a modest rise, but not a substantial rise.
Yeah, I take your point about the 10-year average and how important it is to look at it as pre-COVID and post-COVID as well. And then you've got all those other aspects. But a lot of the government tends to rely on those larger unemployment numbers. What I find concerning about that is it's not taking into consideration the data around small businesses. So small businesses may be self-employed, technically, but they're not paying themselves. And I've got examples in my own family of that happening. And they might be sole traders, but they're not earning enough and they're not turning a net profit that actually gives themselves an income.
Yep.
And yet they're statistically self-employed or they're statistically a business. They may not be going under, but those diagnostics are not there to really give us a full reflection of what's going on in small business. So I think that when we do hear those numbers around unemployment or sort of the bigger picture numbers, it can be a little bit frustrating for the small business community because it's not a reflection of what we're hearing. Do you think the government could do a better job with trying to gather data on what's really happening at the coalface?
There's no doubt you need to, and there's a need to split the macro from the micro. I completely agree with you. At a macro level, that's the macro story.
Mm.
However, to your point, at the micro, and particularly those that are either vulnerable businesses or vulnerable consumers, they are absolutely struggling. So there's no question in these global numbers that often get shared, there's a loss of that micro picture. And you've articulated a very good example of that micro picture where there are a number of small businesses who are really struggling. And there are particular sectors where that is indeed the case. Food and accommodation is one, for example. Those related to the construction sector, back to our conversation in the prior session around PPSR, that they are also very much struggling. So you are absolutely right at the micro level. There are absolutely very clear-cut cases of people suffering serious disadvantage and serious vulnerability, be they small businesses or be they consumers. There's no question about that. And overlaid with that, for those that are really at that level of vulnerability, the tax office is now looking to slowly but surely, start to claw back. It's around about $50 billion that is unpaid, and that's quite a stressful moment for all, but particularly those who are actually quite vulnerable. And in that $50 billion, around 65% of that is actually in the small business space. Mm. So what you've got is two factors. One, at a micro level, there are a group who are very vulnerable. Then overlaid on that, the fact that one of the largest creditors in our system, the tax office, is actively now seeking to get repaid. That is creating that additional stress in that space of the illustration you gave about those types of businesses which are at the edge.
Plus, you've got a lot of, you mentioned earlier the banks and the financial institutions, and to some extent, I will call out the energy companies and the telcos.
Yep, absolutely.
They have to have those conversations. They have to be seen to be reaching out and trying to recoup debt in a more kind and considered manner. They have to be doing that, which is definitely a positive to come out of COVID, because we do see that having a long tail. I'm just wondering, with what is the tipping point? I mean, we look at the high street and we see all those small businesses going under, and this speaks to the point around insolvencies. And so many of those small businesses have their personal assets incorporated Yep. into their business. Is that where you engage with that personal insolvency space? Because I know you and I have spoken about that. I've got my house on the line. I've got a retail. I'm a butcher on the high street, and I've got my house on the line because that's what I use to borrow Yep. in order to get some more refrigeration equipment, for example. Are those the people that you're looking after with the personal bankruptcy laws?
Yeah, so look, to speak more broadly about the personal bankruptcy, as I mentioned, at the moment it'll probably come in around 12,500 by the end of this year, 15 next financial year. To just give you a sense of that, in terms of that liability or debt, there's about $15 billion of liability of debt in that ecosystem. I mentioned the tax office is the largest of those debtors. It's about $3 billion. Banks are about another three. So they're very large players, but you've touched on utilities, and indeed the bank of mum and dad is actually quite a decent player in that group. In terms of the vulnerabilities, small business represents about $10 billion of that $15 billion. So it's the lion's share of the value. But in terms of the number, it's actually the smaller number. So in other words, what that tells you very quickly is they actually have larger liabilities, which is back to your point about they've often put some significant asset up, often the house, to actually manage those large liabilities. Those businesses, absolutely, that is a personal endeavour. That goes to their personal position and therefore, ultimately puts their house on the line. In terms of that process. And so that's quite a personally challenging event for people in terms of the stress it causes them, because it's not just simply a business asset, it's actually a personal asset that is being considered for how to manage the creditor's position.
What happens in Australia when someone is declared bankrupt?
Yeah, so look, once most people, so 90%, go through the debtor process. So they put their hand up and say, I'm now bankrupt and I need to go through to insolvency. And they fill out a statement of affairs, which is just simply a form which gives you your assets and your liabilities, your income and expenses. And then you start a process off where you basically go into bankruptcy, and basically what that does is it stops the clock. And effectively, we then bring in an administrator. They are called a registered trustee. And their responsibility is over the next 3 years and one day is to work through the assets and liabilities and try and reach an accommodation which, A, allows ultimately the debtor to get a fresh start and the creditor to get repaid some of their debt. Generally, they won't get paid all of it, but some of their debt. That process washes through, And then at the end of the 3 years, the debtor gets a fresh start.
A fresh start to start another business?
To start again. Start again unencumbered of the debts that they once had. And the creditors are paid cents in the dollar. They generally do not get back the full amount, but cents in the dollar. The debtor, the small business in this case, gets the fresh start and starts again.
But technically they shouldn't be going into the same industry because of the anti-phoenixing laws, right?
So without going into technicalities, a fresh start is a fresh start, and so they can start again wherever and whatever they want to do. The ones who really think through this, and to be fair, in personal insolvency, the level of return is only in the single digits to the low double digit numbers. So we don't find a lot of people returning. What we see is people learn from the experience and grow from the experience. And even if they end up going back into the same sector or the same industry, they've learned from the experience and they've grown from the experience. Because it genuinely is a fresh start.
And do they tend to approach and declare the bankruptcy as a result of having their hands held by an advisor, like an accountant, or do they sometimes reach that conclusion themselves?
It's a bit of a balance of both. Again, coming back to small business, I would absolutely encourage the small business to reach out to that bookkeeper or that chartered accountant or whoever their advisor is and get really trusted advice. It is quite a vulnerable time in one person's life, and there's often a lot of other things going on above and beyond just financial hardship. And so my call out to people who may be in that space, please reach out to a trusted financial advisor. It could be your bookkeeper. It could be your chartered accountant. I've mentioned registered trustees. They are a very, very reputable group who we actually oversee. Reach out and have conversations with trusted advisors. You're often in a moment of vulnerability, and my big advice to all those of your listeners out there that are in this stage is if it feels too good, it is too good.
That's a good point. And the other thing to call out, of course, is that make sure that advisor you're calling out to is a member of a reputable organisation. That's really critical. That's one sort of easy check that you can make to make sure that they're registered and they're doing their CPD credits, etc. The other one, of course, is Beyond Blue. And obviously, with talking about this, it's important that people reach out. There is a dedicated small business team at Beyond Blue that supports small businesses through a lot of different processes. And this is one place that you might be able to get help as well. I wanted to ask you as well, you mentioned before there is a clear difference between personal insolvencies and companies. Now, I can tell you that my husband probably doesn't realise that he's a director of a company. So a lot of small businesses have had this setup created for them for tax reasons or for you know, financial reasons, and they don't realise that they're in a different setup than someone who's a colleague. So firstly, know what your company structure is a good start. But secondly, what's the difference in the process between the two?
So look, great question. The simple answer is we look after basically those that are unincorporated, so sole traders, partnerships. ASIC looks after if you're incorporated, a proprietary limited company. And that's the split. That's the simplest way to describe the split. And as you would know, a lot of small businesses, in fact, ABS statistics highlight that roughly 50% are unincorporated and roughly 50% are incorporated. And to the very point you raised, often that decision is made by yourself or your trusted advisor, your accountant, at the moment of inception, and then you run with it. You either run down the unincorporated sole trader or partnership path, or you run down the incorporated proprietary limited path. If you get to that point where you are in a situation of financial vulnerability, if it's unincorporated, you walk down our pathway. If you're incorporated, you walk down ASIC's pathway. What we endeavour to do with ASIC is endeavour to make it as seamless as possible. So what we try to do is make sure we have as much of a mirror of the process as we can. So for example, if you walk down our path, which is an unincorporated path, sole traders and partnerships, you will be overseen by a registered trustee. If you walk down the corporated path, a proprietary limited, you will be overseen by a registered liquidator. We work really closely with ASIC to ensure that registered liquidators and registered trustees have a similar threshold of professionalism and oversight to ensure that ultimately, whether you've walked down the incorporated path or you've walked down the unincorporated path, the person overseeing your insolvent position, the registered trustee or the registered liquidator, actually has a similar philosophy in the process.
So what are you as an agency working on to improve the process? It sounds to me like you've got a very good mirrored image with what's going on with ASIC to avoid any confusion. But what would you like to see happen with the agency in the next 2 to 5 years?
Look, thank you for that. I think what we're looking to do as an agency is, and we've briefly touched on it, is really work with those particularly vulnerable where they're potentially facing systems misuse. And they could be small businesses, they could be consumers, and really educate them on what options are available to them and just reinforce the message I said a little earlier, which is go to a trusted advisor. Mm. At the other end of the spectrum is those that are doing deliberate systems misuse, and we are going to be far more vigilant in enforcing where we see poor behaviour and actually really hold them to account fast. Because as the system is turning, we are likely and we are seeing insolvencies increase. Unfortunately, some behaviours of some operators take advantage of situations, and we really want to act quickly and fast. I'll just give you one for demonstration. Recently, we deregistered a registered trustee, and Alexi, that's the group that oversee our process. Mm-hmm. We deregistered him in 17 days. He was seen to be, and he is alleged to be, misusing over $2 million of funds that he had registered trustee oversight of. So we wanted to demonstrate fast to all registered trustees, you have an accountability, you have a responsibility to be a steward of the system, and that involves looking after money which you are trustee of, to protect the interest of creditors and debtors.
So you also regulate the trustee world as
well? We regulate the registered trustees. Paul Leroy was one of those. He was deregistered within 17 days.
I see. So that's one way in which you're going to be improving things. And are you going to work with more agencies across government, such as the ATO, to have a better understanding on how their processes work and how that's going to impact personal insolvencies, for example?
Yeah, look, I think for us and our co-regulators where we are in this regulatory space together, I mentioned the ATO is around about $3 billion of the $15 billion. You know, working very closely with them as a creditor, as well as the banks, the ATO is a real key role to work with them across their credit team, their small business team, and also their fraud team. So working closely with the ATO is one. Clearly working closely with ASIC, in this space we really need to actually work very closely given, as you articulated, some head down an unincorporated path, others head down a corporated path. And the third group, because coming all the way back to the start, is that consumer protection piece, which is really the ACCC. And in working alongside them in a space about, you know, protecting consumers, protecting businesses, such that, you know, they are looking after their financial interests.
Fantastic. Look, it's great to hear the work that you're doing and the plans that you've got coming up. Where can people find out more about your agency and the work that you do with small business?
Well, you said at the outset, the PPSR. The PPSR is ppsr.gov.au. And equally, our organisation, the Australian Financial Securities Authority, which is afsa.gov.au. We'd be delighted to hear from you.
And you mentioned that you've got a phone line as well where people can ring up and ask for advice.
Yes, we do. I'm going to have a struggle to get it. It's 1300. I'm going to have to come back.
That's all right. People can look that up online. There's this magical thing called a computer that most of us have these days. Look, thank you so much for coming on the program today, Tim. If you've missed any of today's show, you can, of course, catch up wherever you get your podcasts via the Small Biz Matters website and via the Community Radio Network. Thank you once again for joining us.
Thanks, Alexi.
So who do we have coming on the program next week on Small Biz Matters? We'll be interviewing Gina Cass-Gottlieb, who is the current chair of the ACCC. It's really important that small businesses understand what the unique powers of the ACCC are and how they're benefiting small businesses to have a strong, vigorous, competitive competitive sector, and that means every sector of the small business economy. What's been quite interesting in the media recently is the talk around mergers and acquisitions, and we're going to be unpacking that with Gina to find out what the impact is for small businesses, both in the tech startup sector, but also more broadly. It's an important conversation if you're in regional communities. It's an important conversation in your local community to make sure that we remain having a competitive atmosphere for business. The last thing anybody wants is big box retailers as far as the eye can see, and consumers forced into paying specific costs. I can think of a sector where that's happening already, and that's being unpacked by the government too. So join me next week on Small Biz Matters, 888 100.1 FM, and across the Community Radio Network, and we'll see you all next week.